Welcome to The Breakfast Show on Faith FM with Scaffy and Lindsay. This is the best place to start your day with positive and uplifting thoughts. You're listening across Australia on 87.6, 87.8 or 88 depending on where you are, or you can listen to us through our Faith FM app anywhere in the world. Well, today Is it Wednesday? I believe it's Wednesday.
It's Wednesday. Yes.
It's Wednesday.
And Scaffy is still not here.
Scaffy's still not here. So, yes, we said Scaffy and Lindsay, but it's actually Ben and Lindsay and Shell today.
That's right. Yeah. Thanks, Ben, for filling in.
Yep. Big shoes to fill.
Happy to be here.
While Scaffy's off living his best life at the snow. So, we always like to start our day with some gratitudes. Who wants to go first with a gratitude?
You go first.
Me?
Today.
Okay. I'm grateful for my friend Kez. Shout out to Kez. She's, amongst many other things, she is a hairdresser. And so she came over to my house last night and she gave me a little bit of a trim and shaped my hair a little bit more than I usually have it. And so I'm feeling fresh and bouncy this morning.
That is really good. I got some photos from a friend of mine who tried to bleach her own hair, and I nearly busted a gut laughing at her.
Was half of it fried off?
It is. No, she just did the roots. Oh. Thankfully, she didn't lose all of that hair. That would be so bad. But it is brighter than the sun, let's just say.
I had some of my hair melt off when I went to a hairdresser. It was like a trainee hairdresser, so I could get it for cheaper, and I certainly got it for cheaper. And I got what I paid for.
More than half off, right?
Exactly. I literally chopped it off the next thing.
Yeah, you'd have to. Oh, it's so bad. I've had a bad experience
like
that too.
Spongy spaghetti. Anyway, who's next? Who wants to share?
Ben, I can go next.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciate family.
Yeah?
Yeah. 25 years ago, I moved away from Currumbong.
Oh, okay.
And been to Torres Strait, Queensland, Northern Territory, Canberra. Now I'm back here. My family's here, nephews, nieces, brothers and sisters, mum and dad.
You're just surrounded by them all again.
So I feel like I'm back home again.
Yeah. Oh, that's so lovely.
Yes.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I'm grateful for family.
Amen.
All those get-togethers. Oh, yeah, it'd be great. Okay, I am grateful for the moon.
It was massive. It's full moon today.
Yeah, yesterday and today. We've been doing a bit of a dance together because the road that I drive on is very, very curvy.
Okay.
And so the moon's over here, and now it's over here, and now it's,
you've been dancing with the moon.
Yeah.
Not dancing with the stars, but dancing with the moon this time.
Exactly.
Cute.
Right. But it's interesting because I can't get it in front of me until I get to the lights right here at Avondale.
Oh, really?
So once you're at that spot, then it's like directly in front. And yeah, it's just kind of cool. It's like, okay.
And because it's breakfast show, we're seeing it set. We're seeing the sun set. Normally we see it come up.
Well, the moon set, yeah.
The moon set, yep.
Moon set. Oh, moon set.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. No, so that's been fun. Just watching the giant moon over the last two mornings.
Yeah, it's been so cool. Yesterday it was like really, really yellow, and this morning it was like really, very really
white.
Silver.
Yeah.
It was super cool. That's the blessings that you get when you wake up at 4 a.m. and start making your way here.
That's right.
Seeing sights nobody else is seeing.
Yeah. Well, what about you, listener? Our number is 0491-064-669. Why don't you text us in what you're grateful for today? 0491-064-669.
Okay. So today we've got some interesting things coming up ahead in the show. Today we're going to be looking at Nehemiah chapter 7 and what's so important about all these names. We're going to be looking at all the names again and some of the security. Was it a bit over the top? We're going to be looking at new research debunking a 70-year-old infertility myth. We're also going to be hearing about Peter Brock and the lawsuit with an inheritance battle for his wealth. He was a race car driver, for those who don't know. We're going to be talking to Jennifer Skews about how we program emotions and what tips us over the edge. And we're talking about divorce and unbelievers.
You're listening to The Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
We have our very first quiz question for today.
Ooh.
shall
we? We do indeed, and it will be a fill-in-the-blank for you to start your morning. Where there is no vision, the people blank. Where there is no vision, the people blank. Fill in that blank for me. 0491-064-669. We've got two correct answers in the studio. How about you? Do you know the answer? You want to take a stab at it either way? So you can text us in on 0491-064-669. We're just missing for one missing word here in this fill in the blank. Where there is no vision, the people blank. And you can find that in Proverbs 29, verse 18.
Such an important proverb to get our head wrapped around, but we can chat about that more later. We are now going to jump into our Nehemiah study for this morning. So we're going to turn to Nehemiah chapter 7. Now, I will warn you, there's a lot of names and a lot of numbers in this chapter, but we'll get through it. Okay, let's read Nehemiah chapter 7, verse 1. I'll read that out. Then it was, when the wall was built and I had hung the doors, when the gatekeepers, the singers, and the Levites had been appointed, that I gave the charge of Jerusalem to my brother Hanani and Hananiah, the leader of the citadel, for he was a faithful man and feared God more than many. Okay, so what's going on here? Just in that first couple of verses. What are some significant things?
Yeah, he's establishing people to take care of various aspects of the city. Gates, musicians, the priests, the Levites are the priests.
Yep. Yeah, we haven't quite gotten that far. Just in these first couple of verses, we see, first of all, the wall has been built and he had hung the doors. So in the previous, actually, you know what? We've skipped a very important little passage. We got as far as chapter 6, verse 14. We need to read a couple of verses beforehand. That's my bad. All right, so we're going to start in chapter 6, verse 15. Going to rewind slightly. So after we had the bulk of chapter 6, yesterday we were talking about Tobiah and Sanballat and all the bad guys and all the false prophets and all the different ways that they were trying to attack Nehemiah, whether to attack his physical health and well-being or whether to attack his reputation or to get him to be fearful and intimidated. None of these things worked. And then it says in verse 15, so the wall was finished on the 25th day of Elul in 52 days. It only took 52 days to build the wall.
Yes.
Man, that guy's efficient.
I remember that. We had that as a quiz question.
Really?
Yeah.
When was that?
A few months ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You didn't even know we would be talking about this a few months ago.
No, did not. Nope.
There you go. So, and it happened when all our enemies heard of it and all the nations around us saw these things that they were very disheartened in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was done by our God. So interesting to me that all the surrounding peoples have been trying to intimidate the Israelites and trying to intimidate Nehemiah. And yet after 52 days, the wall is built. Their plots have been foiled, and all of a sudden they're very disheartened. Maybe not completely fearful, but they're like, oh no, like what on earth? What is going on here? We'd failed. Something bad is about to happen. It's like a sense of foreboding, hey?
Yeah, when you see the walls of Jerusalem, even some of the ones now that are left from these days, the stones were huge.
Yeah.
And for them to build the wall and to put so many stones in place in 52 days was miraculous, was a miracle. And so they could only attribute that to their God helping them.
My understanding was that they didn't have like the biggest and the baddest walls immediately, but they got just what was sufficient, like half height kind of walls. We saw that in one of the earlier chapters, and it's probably that they continue to keep building it up over time and strengthening the walls over time and making them taller and higher. Yeah. But they certainly had something sufficient as walls after 52 days.
Yeah.
So They perceive that this work was done by our God. Isn't that interesting? If there's somebody who is a really faithful leader and is efficient and is inspiring and manages to get people to do the work in such a quick time, it's really a testament to the work of God, isn't it?
Yeah. What's really interesting is the word work here in the original language is the same as Genesis chapter 2, where it says God finished his work of creation.
There you go.
And so God creating the world and God assisting the Israelites in building this wall.
That's an interesting link I didn't really notice. There you go. Okay, verse 17 says, "Also in those days, the nobles of Judah sent many letters to Tobiah, and the letters of Tobiah came to them." So there's a lot of letter writing going back and forth between Tobiah. And remember, is Tobiah a good guy or a bad guy?
He's not a good guy.
He's not a good guy. He's a bad guy. "For many in Judah were pledged to him." They had an allegiance with him. They were somehow connected and loyal to him. "For he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Ara." I don't know what's so important about Shechaniah and Ara. Shell, do you have any idea what's so important about these guys?
No idea.
No idea. I didn't get enough time to check that out, but
yes,
some fancy guy.
Yeah, I checked this out. Yeah. This verse 18 is actually saying that there was intermarriage between the Israelites and the surrounding people.
Sure.
And this is why letters, because they were relatives.
Yeah.
And related.
In-laws.
So they had ulterior motives in what they were trying to discourage Nehemiah and what he was doing.
Yeah. And this is, I guess, a really important point about why God originally told the Israelites way back when they were coming out of the wilderness into the land of Canaan, saying, do not intermarry with the other Canaanite people. Because the Canaanite people, they're not loyal to God. They don't have the same ethics and values. They don't follow the laws of God. They do whatever they want, and a lot of it is entirely very immoral. And if you're going to start having marriage relationships with these people, it's going to really muddy the waters about how you live your life and your loyalty to God yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, correct.
And I guess we'll probably be talking about that a little bit later today when we're looking at 1 Corinthians about what it's like being Christians married to unbelievers versus what it's like being Christians married to believers and a few details surrounding that. So that's something that you can look forward to come in about an hour and a half. "For many in Judah were pledged to him because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Ara, and his son Jehohanan had married the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Berechiah. Also, they reported his good deeds before me and reported my words to him. Tobiah sent letters to frighten me." Isn't it interesting? They're like, oh, Nehemiah, Tobiah is just such a great guy. Look at all these amazing things that he's done. Don't you think he's such a great guy? Like, everyone is being sent to say these types of things to Nehemiah. Nehemiah's like, whatever.
Yeah.
But instead, they're also being double crossing, and anything that they might hear that might be juicy or interesting that Nehemiah has to say, they're running back to Tobiah to let him know all of the plans that they think that Nehemiah has. And so Nehemiah is really struggling to find any kind of, I guess, loyalty to him and to God in this moment, because everyone has got these relational ties, these ties that are built into the fabric of society through marriage. They're all lacking loyalty to the one true God and to Nehemiah, and their loyalty is in misplaced places.
Yeah, and yet from yesterday's study in verse 12, Nehemiah realized, he said, "I perceive that God had not sent him at all."
Yeah.
And so it was not God's design that what they were saying.
It kind of feels like Nehemiah is all alone here, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
It's like, you know, he's the only guy with the vision for doing God's will. And he's like, my goodness, these people are just, they've lost the plot. They're missing the point here. And nobody has any sense of loyalty to the work or to God or to getting this job done. He is still managing somehow to convince and to influence a lot of people to actually do the work. But in the meantime, they're also trying to hedge their bets and have multiple masters in the sense and reporting the work and the words of Nehemiah to the enemies. So a really interesting situation for Nehemiah to try to lead through. How would you lead in a situation like that?
Yeah. In my work, sometimes we have, you know, people that work like this.
Yeah.
You know, take sides and even try and get you know, people on their side against you.
Yeah.
And it's usually, you know, when things are going well and God's work is moving forward, that there are challenges and people come up with all kinds of excuses of, you know, you're not doing it right or you're not following procedure or whatever it may be. Yeah, so in real life, you know, all of us struggle with this, where people don't see eye to eye with us. But nevertheless, if we're doing what we know that God is guiding and, you know, we're close enough to God to know what he wants for us, then we shouldn't take too much notice of those around us.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Don't take too much notice of what is it, the peanut gallery, and just keep working.
Yeah.
Shell's cracking up in the corner over there. Okay, now we've made it to the beginning of chapter 7. Then it was, when the wall was built and I had hung the doors, when the gatekeepers, the singers and Levites had been appointed, that I gave the charge of Jerusalem to my brother Hanani and Hananiah, the leader of the citadel, for he was a faithful man and feared God more than many. So he's hung the doors. They finally got the doors in place. What do you think is so significant about the doors being hung in place?
Yeah, I guess it was the crowning act of finishing the wall, and that was now the only access.
Yeah.
And once the gates were up, then they could be closed and the city was guarded.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, building the stone wall was only half of the job, really. Hanging the doors meant the city finally had functional and controlled access points. Instead of, you know, as they're having a sleep, all the enemies are rushing in during the night and trying to cause havoc. They can't do that anymore. Every access point is covered.
Yeah, it brings to mind a story with Samson. When Samson spent a night in a city.
Yes, I remember this story.
Yes.
Yeah, he spends the night and then as he leaves, he's like, I'm going to take the doors with me. See ya. And like, that actually really emphasizes the point here that this door was not just, you know, your average door for your front door of your house. It wasn't a tiny little wooden plank like that. These were massive, enormous, super, super heavy structures that were placed there, and it would have actually taken a great deal of effort to hoist them up into place, plonk them into their hinges, and to actually set them there.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
We now have a quiz answer and a second quiz question. Please produce a shell.
Indeed we do. So the answer to our first question was the word perish. And everybody who texted in got that one correct. We got some early birds playing along. So well done to Janelle, John, and Devo, who all got that one. And our next quiz question is, according to Romans 14:11, whose knee will bow before the Lord? According to Romans 14:11, whose knee will bow before the Lord? We've got correct answers in the studio, 0491-064-669. 0491-064-669 is our text line. You can find that answer in Romans 14:11, as I said. And we just are looking for whose knees will bow before the Lord.
Okay. So let's hop back into our Nehemiah study. We are just in the beginning of Nehemiah chapter 7. So we've seen that the doors have been rehung and that this is significant because they're massive, enormous structures and very hard to hoist into place and obviously very hard to like barrage and, you know, kick down. And so these make the walls of Jerusalem completely secure at this point, as much as it can be in the ancient world. But they're going to take their security measures even to the next level. So let's have a look at what happens next. Nehemiah 7 verse 3 says, "And I said to them, do not let the gates of Jerusalem be open until the sun is hot. And while they stand guard, let them shut and bar the doors. And appoint guards from among the inhabitants of Jerusalem, one at his watch station and another in front of his own house." Okay, so first of all, what is happening with the sunshine here?
Yeah. Daytime was the safest time to open the doors.
Yeah.
And when the sun was up, that's when they planted their crops and, you know, went out of the city.
Yeah.
Yeah. So nighttime, doors needed to be closed.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until sunrise that they would open the doors.
Yeah, well, actually, it seems like it wasn't until even after sunrise that they opened the doors, because for the majority of the cities in the ancient Near East, they typically would open the doors at around sunrise when it's still kind of a little bit, you know, that dawn, that slight darkness, you know, there is light coming into the sky and people are waking up and getting ready to go about their work, but it's still cool. It's still a bit shadowy. But it's saying here that they wouldn't open the doors until the sun got hot, which is closer to at least like 9 a.m., wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're waiting even a few extra hours in the morning before allowing the gates to be opened. And this would largely be for the idea of if there's anyone waiting in the shadows, you know, in that early pre-dawn sort of time, they don't want to open the doors before the full sunlight is hitting and showing every little nook and cranny. They don't want any surprises and they don't want to leave any room for the enemies of the nearby people to get in when they're still a bit sleepy, a little bit, you know, haven't quite fully woken up yet, not really ready. You know, when you wake up first thing in the morning and you're like stumbling around in the dark for a little bit until your brain sort of like calibrates and it's like, okay, here's all my arms and legs. That's how I am every day anyway. Like I walk like a little bit limpy, a little bit funny for the first 5-10 minutes and then I kind of come to my senses. So imagine you wake up and it's still pre-dawn or just early dawn, and some enemy is rushing through the gates and they're trying to attack because they've been up all night staking out, ready to go. And you're just like incapacitated, ready to fight off these enemies. Of course, you wouldn't be ready for that. So they're waiting for the sun to come up. They're waiting to be able to see exactly what's on the other side of the door. And they're also waiting for everyone to be fully mentally and physically prepared for any altercation that might come.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm wondering because the doors had only just been put there, and the city's now safe. I wonder if this extended time of the doors being closed, where people could, you know, rest and sleep in, maybe they've worked hard in 50 days. They've done the wall with God's help, of course. Yeah, so must have something to do with.
Let them sleep in a little bit, let them rest.
Nehemiah let them have peace for a bit.
Yeah, especially in those early morning hours, definitely. Yeah, and remembering they weren't even taking their robes off when they were going to bed. Like they were sleeping in their work clothes except for when they needed to go wash in the river or something. They would take their clothes off. They were like fully just going hard at it for 2 months straight.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he says, all right, don't open the gates until the sun is hot. And while they stand guard, let them shut and bar the doors and appoint guards from among the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Every person was on rotation at guarding something, whether it was the front gates or even at the front of his own house. They were still on guard within the city at their own home. They didn't know who they could trust. We're going to get into this in just a moment. There were so many people there. Well, it was a very large city, but it was not exactly fully occupied. There was a lot of free empty space in the city because there wasn't enough inhabitants for it to be fully occupied. But the people who were there, most of them were Israelites, but some of them, they had some iffy genealogy. So let's get into that. In verse 4, it says, "Now the city was large and spacious, but the people in it were few, and the houses were not rebuilt." So they're probably just still staying in tents at this point after coming back from Babylon. "Then my God put it in my heart to gather the nobles, the rulers, and the people that they might be registered by genealogy. And I found a register of the genealogy of those who had come up in the first return and found written in it." So before we find what was written in it, now he's got the gates built, he's got the walls built, the gates hung, he's got people guarding the gates, people guarding their own homes, and now he wants to know exactly who is within the city walls. So he looks up the history, the genealogy of the people who first arrived decades before, and this passage we're about to read is very, very closely comparable with Ezra chapter 6. From the beginning of the chapter, basically. Ezra chapter 2. Nehemiah chapter 7 and Ezra chapter 2 are very, very similar lists. And if you have the time in your free time, you can compare them. They're very, very, very similar, but some of the numbers are slightly off. And that is not necessarily a sign that there is inconsistencies or errors or anything within the Bible. It's just that there were different ways that the scribes wrote, and some of the Hebrew letters were so, so similar that sometimes they mixed up a letter with a different letter. So they were saying pretty much the same thing, but occasionally there were like human errors that were involved. But that's even an indication that this is a historical document and it is very trustworthy. So from verse 6, it says, "These are the people of the province who came back from the captivity, of those who had been carried away, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away, and who returned to Jerusalem and Judah, everyone to his city. Those who came with Zerubbabel were Jeshua, Nehemiah, Azariah, Raamiah, Nehemani, Mordecai, Bilshan, Mispereth, Bigvai, Nehem, and Bana." Now, try to stay with me, guys. There's going to be a little bit of repetition. There's going to be some funky names here, and I might not read all of them just for the sake of boringness, but let's just read a few of these names out for a minute. "The number of the men of the people of Israel, the sons of Parosh, 2,172. The sons of Shephatiah, 372. The sons of Ara, 652. The sons of Pahath Moab, the sons of Jeshua and Joab, 2,818. The sons of Elam, 1,254. The sons of Zattu, 845. The sons of Zakkai, 760. The sons of Binui, 648. The sons of Bebai, 628. The sons of Azgad, 2,322. And on and on and on and on and on it goes. Some of them, they were sons of actual people, and some of them, they were the descendants of certain towns in the land of Judah and Israel. So, for example, the men of Rabbah and Geba, those are towns. The men of Beth Asmaveth and Kiriath-Jearim and Kephira and Beeroth, those were different towns. So these were people from certain localities, and some were people who were descended of specific identified persons. So we go on and on, and you might be wondering, what on earth, why do we care about who these people were, how many there were? But ultimately, it all adds up. And we also get to the Levites, the son of Jeshua, of Kadmiel, and the sons of Hodavah, 74. The singers, the sons of Asaph, 148. The gatekeepers, the sons of Shalom, the sons of Ater, the sons of Talmon, the sons of Akub, the sons of Hatita, the sons of Shobai, 138. These are really important names because the Levites, the singers, the gatekeepers all had very specific God-given roles in their lives.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about the Levites and the singers, Pastor Ben?
Yeah, well, the Levites were the tribe that didn't worship the golden calf.
Oh, really?
At Mount Sinai. Mm-hmm. And so when it came to appointing the spiritual leaders, the priests that would turn people's minds towards God, they were that their tribe was chosen as the priests.
Yeah, so of the 12 tribes, one of the tribes is called Levi. And in the tribe of Levi, so all of the descendants of the tribe of Levi had some type of role within temple worship, essentially.
Yeah.
And they would rotate either through cleaning the utensils or setting up the tabernacle as they were moving it through the wilderness, or serving in some way, baking the bread for the showbread or whatever it might be. And I believe the singers also came from the Levites. Is that correct?
Yes, I understand.
Yeah, the sons of Asaph. So Asaph was a guy within the tribe of Levi, and his descendants were specifically the singers, which is a really cool, like, family heritage thing. We're all, you know, a family of singers forever and ever and ever. So cool. So, yes, these were basically the Bible workers, the local church workers, whatever they were also helping educate the people of Israel about the Bible or the, you know, the ancient texts predating what we now call the Bible. So we have all these different names, all these different roles, all these different numbers of people. But we come to down to 57. It says the sons of Solomon's servants, the sons of Sotai, the sons of Shephareth, the sons of Peridah, and down and on until we get to 61. And these are the ones who came up from Telmela, Telharsha, Cherub, Adon, and Immer. But they could not identify their father's house, nor their lineage, whether they were of Israel. So far we've got all these people descended of specific people or specific towns, but now in verse 61, we're seeing a group of people who have arrived, but they actually couldn't identify what kind of Israelite they were, what tribe they were from, what town they were from. They just thought they were Israelites, so they came along for the ride.
Yeah.
So it says, they could not identify their father's house nor their lineage, whether they were of Israel. The sons of Deliah, the sons of Tobiah, the sons of Nekoda, 642. Oh, Tobiah is in that list. That's interesting. Isn't he one of the bad guys?
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yes.
And of the priests, even some of the priests couldn't identify their lineage. It says, the sons of Habiah, the sons of Koz, the sons of Barzillai, who took a wife of the daughters of Barzillai the Gileadite and was called by their name. Now, this has been already mentioned back in Ezra chapter 2. And I don't know, do you remember who Barzillai was back in the time of David?
No, I don't.
Okay, so Barzillai was a wealthy man of Gilead, so just across the east side of the Jordan River. And when David was running away from his own son later on in his life, Barzillai was somebody who sheltered him. And so they had a really good relationship. He looked after him. Barzillai was a very well-loved man, essentially, and had really good honor within society. And so some guy eventually married a daughter descended from this very highly honorable man. And he decided that because this daughter's lineage was more valuable than his own lineage, he was going to change his name. And usually a woman takes the husband's name in culture for, you know, generations. This has been going on forever and ever. But this man decided he was going to be very progressive, and he took his wife's name instead of keeping his own lineage. And by doing that, he has now disqualified all of his own descendants, because he cannot identify his actual genealogy through the male line.
Oh, wow.
And he's one of the priests.
Yeah.
He gave away his priestly identity for the identity of some guy who was really nice to King David, and now it has impacted the rest of his own descendants forever and ever.
Yeah. Amazing.
Isn't it crazy? Yeah. It's really important to know who we are in Christ and to not give that up for something else that looks shiny and bright and more valuable than what we already have. Sometimes we can think that the identity that God has given us is not that great. But ultimately, we need to hold on to what he has given us, his special, unique calling on our own lives, because this man gave up everything for himself and for his descendants because he thought something else was better.
Mm.
So important.
What a lesson. Lesson for us.
Yeah. So they sought their listing among those who were registered by genealogy, but it was not found. Therefore, they were excluded from the priesthood and defiled. And the governor said to them that they should not eat of the most holy things until a priest could consult with the Urim and Thummim, which were some special stones that lit up as a yes or no answer from God, basically. Yeah. That is where we're going to leave our Nehemiah study for today. We'll get back into it again tomorrow. We have a quiz answer, Producer Shell.
We do indeed. But, Min, you can even get this one. For that lady in your life or whatnot. And, yeah, I find oftentimes that these can be crossover thoughts as well. Yeah. So, yeah, really, really good book to have in your home. Okay, our quiz answer. According to Romans 14:11, whose knee will bow before the Lord? Everybody's knees going to bow.
Every knee will bow.
The wicked, the righteous, everybody's knee will bow at that time.
Is it every knee will bow, every tongue confess? Is that how... Is it that verse or is that a different verse?
I'm not 100% sure, actually.
Something like that.
I think it might be that verse. I'll have to look it up now.
No, yeah. Every knee will bow and confess is Philippians chapter 2.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's not the Romans 14:11 passage, but let me just bring up what that one is so we can read it out. For it is written, as I live, saith the Lord, every knee shall bow to me and every tongue shall confess to God. So yeah, it's kind of saying pretty much the same thing.
Awesome. Hey, we have got a really great show coming up today. We're going to be talking about new research debunking a 70-year-old infertility myth. We're going to be talking about lawsuits, about inheritance battles for wealth. We're going to talk to Jennifer Skews about how we program emotions and what tips us over the edge emotionally. And we're going to be talking about divorce with unbelievers.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.